Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Hank. I feel like I've been gone for a long time.
It feels that way to me, too.
It's nice to be back in the chair, ready to get to work today. I have a lot on my mind, a lot to talk about. Kind of want to catch everyone up on what's been going on and also hear what's been going on in your life over the last couple weeks. I trust that it went well. I trust that everyone had a wonderful holiday weekend. And I think in the spirit of the holiday weekend, I want to continue it on just a little bit today to carry on that 4th of July spirit. Because I probably would have done this show last week in kind of preparation for the 4th of July, but I wasn't here to do that. And so I thought I'm going to carry on this gift of the 4th of July just as my neighbors have decided to continue on lighting off fireworks for days and days after the 4th of July. So my gift back to my community for their lighting off M80s and whatever else they're exploding in my neighborhood is to continue this conversation about what it is to be citizens, to have freedom, to talk about why it is we have a day where we drink beer and eat hot dogs and set off fireworks. And so this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. I'll invite you to be part of this conversation in a little while. I always like to hear from you, what's on your mind and what you're thinking about today's topic or anything else that's moving through you. And you can also be part of the conversation through our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, on the website, thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can also listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org. And if you haven't been to the newly revamped website lately, I highly recommend checking it out because our crack news team keeps lots of great information streaming there throughout the day. And you can really stay in touch with what's going on in the area and in the world by checking out kcbx.org. All right. So this is going to be a little bit of the what I did for my summer vacation conversation that's going to tie in with the 4th of July. So bear with me just a little bit because it'll make sense once I start telling the story. All right. So what I did for my summer vacation, went to Washington, D.C., and I'd never been to Washington, D.C., so I hate to be that person who comes to the party late and then, you know, raves about how great the party is. And everyone says, look, we've been here for years. Why are you just catching on? But I'd never been to Washington, D.C., and I was back there for a training for a program that I'm going to talk to you about later in the summer. Probably going to talk about it a lot. But I was there for a training, and part of this training was us doing, this group of people I was with, doing a walk jog or a run jog around the National Mall and going through all the monuments. And if you've never been to them in person, it's overwhelming, or it was overwhelming for me to just see the size of everything and just the glory of these beautiful landmarks that were created right here. And going by the White House, of course, was amazing. And if you look on my Facebook page, I have a picture. I'm clearly proud to be standing in front of the White House, having my picture taken. But the thing about the monuments that was so moving, it was what was written, what the quotes were that these men who had given their lives and their careers and their passions to this country and the things they had to say. They were so incredibly inspiring to me. And I'll talk to you about those as we go along because I don't want to read every single one of them. But, you know, starting with Jefferson and what he talked about, you know, what it takes to be a citizen and what the roles of the citizens, what the roles of the government are in maintaining this place. And then, you know, FDR and all that he talked about in service and work and building of this country. And then Martin Luther King's memorial quotes, you know, talking about making a career of humanity, committing ourselves to the noble struggle for equal rights. These quotes were so powerful, and I started thinking, gosh, here are people who gave their lives so that they could build something they believed in fully, right? This ideal of what it is, the United States of America. You know, beginning with the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence and what was at stake for them, right? Get walking away from their families and their fortunes and their lives to sign this Declaration of Independence and then to go and serve active military operations to live this ideal, this kind of dream. It wasn't a reality at the time. They really weren't sure what they were fighting for, but they knew it was going to be something better than that they were leaving behind. And so having experienced those two things, I just kept thinking, I kept asking my husband, is there a cause that you would die for? Is there something you feel so passionately about that you would put your life on the line like this? You know, would you have signed the Declaration of Independence, knowing that if you were captured by the British, you would be imprisoned and probably killed for treason, right? 12 of the signers of the Declaration of Independence had their homes ransacked and burned. They signed away their fortunes. They were just regular people, right? 24 were lawyers and jurists. 11 were merchants. 9 of them were farmers and large plantation owners. They were men of means. They were well educated, but they signed this piece of paper saying that this ideal of this country is more important than my life as it is at this moment. So, needless to say, it got me thinking. I don't know if there's a cause that I would knowingly put my life on the line for, and I wondered why that is or what it takes, what kind of person it takes to have that courage or that conviction. And so after our stay in Washington, D.C., my husband and I are celebrating our 30th wedding anniversary this year. And so it's kind of a series of trips that we're doing. And so for this trip, you know, my husband said, what do you want to do? We can go stay at a resort or we can, you know, do something romantic. And I said, I want to drive from Washington, D.C. to Texas. I want to drive through the South and I want to see Montgomery, Alabama and Selma and this birthplace of the civil rights movement. I want to continue on with this whole ideal of being passionate about something. So we drove through the South and ended up in Montgomery. And I was blown away by two things. One, that there was no one there. You know, we had left Washington, D.C., and we'd gone through Asheville, North Carolina, which has been completely loved to death with tourists and people everywhere. And Washington, D.C. is crowded with tourists. And then we get to Montgomery, which is kind of this, you know, dichotomy of historical importance, being the birthplace of the Confederacy, right? The very first White House of the Confederacy is there in Montgomery, Alabama, but it's also the heart of much of the civil rights movement. And yet there was no one in this city, in the downtown at all. So my husband and I ended up having the complete run of the downtown and walking through the city streets with no other people was phenomenal. It was beautiful downtown. We had a room overlooking the river, and they've tried to do a lot of kind of improvements probably to draw people to the downtown more. And there's restaurants and fun places to walk, and they have a riverboat. And they've also brought in a AA baseball team, the Montgomery Biscuits, which if there is a sign that maybe your dietary habits are killing you, if you've named your baseball team the Montgomery Biscuits, that would be one of the signs. But needless to say, that was fun. My husband and I went to a game and sat there and enjoyed, you know, the warm weather. It was great. But the next day, walking around downtown, I had a lump in my throat the way I did on the National Mall the whole time, walking by the bus stop where Rosa Parks, right, refused to give up her seat. And there's a memorial museum right there for her. And then walking two more blocks over, you come to the Greyhound bus station where the Freedom Riders, 21 young people, no one over the age of 21, stepped off the bus knowing they were going to be met by a throng of people, by hordes of people that were angry that they were trying to desegregate the bus system. And they walked out of that bus station only to be clubbed and beaten and bruised and arrested. And they knowingly walked into it. And then three blocks up from that, you walk up this beautiful boulevard. And there's, you know, the church that Martin Luther King was a preacher at, the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. And then you move a little further down the road and there's the Civil Rights Memorial that's absolutely beautiful. And on the memorial, it lists 41 people who died fighting for civil rights. And the thing that kept drawing me was that the people that were named here, the names of the 21 freedom riders at the Greyhound bus station, the 41 people at the Civil Rights Museum, and then if you go inside, there's even more placards commemorating people who gave their lives to civil rights. They were just average people. They were housewives and lawyers and husbands and children. It was overwhelming. It was overwhelming. I mean, clearly overwhelming because I feel like I want to share this with you so much. And then seeing all of these memorials and these landmarks and reading the stories of the people who were willing to put their lives on the line for an injustice that they could no longer live with, at the same time, the dichotomy of the birthplace of the Confederacy, right? And so we walk by the first White House, and then we walked up the steps of the and there's no security anywhere. I mean, that's the thing that's so amazing, that we're so used to having guards everywhere and, you know, police and things cordoned off. And but here in downtown Montgomery, you can walk up the marble steps of the state capitol and go up and knock on the front door. I mean, it was pretty amazing. And around the state capitol, though, of course, are monuments and statues. And there's one statue that's in honor of the Confederate soldiers, and it's right there on the state property. And so it makes you kind of catch your breath and what that represents, what that symbolizes. And of course, in what's going on in South Carolina in the fight about the Confederate flag. So it was interesting to walk up and see it there. The other thing that struck me is on that day that my husband and I were walking around, there were no other people. There was one truck that kept driving by, and it was driving around the state capitol and then down the street past the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church and past the Civil Rights Memorial. It was a blue pickup truck flying the Confederate flag out the back, and this guy was just doing this rotation around downtown. It was a little frightening. It made me feel a little anxious. And so we left Montgomery and we drove the road from Montgomery to Selma. We kind of did it backwards of the march, but we went to the Interpretive Museum, and throughout the grounds there, they have another landmark of 8 families who ended up being displaced when they went to register to vote. They're right. Right? Their right to vote. They went to register and they were thrown off of the farms that they lived on as sharecroppers and ended up having to live out in this field on the side of the road for almost 2 years with no electricity or running water. But the conviction to want something better for your life, to put your entire family and your life on the line, inspiring. And then getting to Selma, and we walked the bridge, only people around. Again, everywhere we went, it felt like that had been somehow the end of the world, and we were the only people walking around, looking at everything, and I kept thinking, why are we the only people here? This is so powerful and overwhelming. It just changed me in a real fundamental way. And so the reason I bring it up today is because I wonder if you've thought about a passion or a cause you'd be willing to put your life on the line for. I mean, I know as a mother, I'd put my life on the line for my family, for my children. There's something beautiful about, you know, being a mom, because it gives you that cause, that place. It's like, this is what I'm fighting for, and I'll fight for my children and, you know, stand up against injustices in the schools and, you know, stand up for them if they're being bullied. But now that my children are grown and for the most part out of the house, I'm left thinking, so what is my cause now? Is there something that I believe so strongly about that I'd be willing to step off that Greyhound bus or walk at the front of the line marching from Selma to Montgomery? Or would I sign a Declaration of Independence? Would I put my name to something, to a petition of any sort that would mark me as believing in something that might cause me to be persecuted? And would I state my religious affiliation if I knew that it would cause me to come to some sort of harm? And I don't know. And I'm wondering how you feel about that. Is there something that you would put your life on the line for? A cause that you feel so strongly about that you would stand up and identify yourself as someone who's believing in something greater than who you are? And if you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm in the studio today talking about the 4th of July and what that means. What was that fight for freedom that happened in 1776? And what are those continued fights for freedom and justice that we've experienced in this country over the course of the last 200 plus years? What are they? You know, those who fought for the Confederacy believed they had a cause worth dying for. And thousands of young men and women did. We have the civil rights movement. We just, you know, had a victory in the last couple weeks with gay marriage. And there are people who are willing to put their lives on the line for that and lost their lives standing up and identifying themselves as someone who was not going to tolerate injustice. But I'm wondering, is there something you would put your life on the line for? And have you been to the South? Have you been to Montgomery? Have you been to any of these civil rights landmarks, memorials? Have you done something beyond watching Selma, which was a great movie? But have you been to those places? I'm curious to know what your experience was of that. What do you think of these things? What do you think of this topic? To be part of the conversation, our number is 805-781-3875. 805-781-3875. I invite you to join the conversation. What is this thing called freedom, and why do we care about it so much? Or have we forgotten really what it's all about, and it's more about fighting for the right to light off firecrackers for 2 or 3 weeks before and after the 4th, or to be able to, you know, drink beer and have barbecues? Is there something more to this? Do we remember what it is? And how would you feel if one of your children came home and said to you, I'm going to ride the Greyhound bus. I'm going to take it into Montgomery, Alabama. And when I step off that bus, I know that I'm going to be attacked by angry people. John Lewis, one of the freedom riders who actually went on, he was 21 at the time, he went on to serve in Congress. He said about the freedom rider, about why he did this, he said, if not us, then who? Will someone else's children have to risk their lives instead of us risking ours? Like, where does that come from? He's 21 years old when he says this. Is it something that only someone young can feel? Is that great passion, that desire to right wrongs, to stand up to injustice? I don't know. And I don't know how I'd feel as a mom if one of my girls came to me and said, I'm going to ride that bus, or I'm going to march in Selma, or I'm going to sign this declaration, committing myself to this ideal of something greater than what we already have. Maybe we're just too comfortable. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's too hard to empathize with struggle because our lives aren't a great struggle. I mean, we live here in this very comfortable coastal California environment, and would you be willing to sign something declaring the environmental destruction something that you'd put your life on the line for? Would you lie in front of a dozer trying to tear down a tree? I'm just curious. 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And as always, I like to tie these conversations together, right, with things that are going on with our mental health and well-being. And so I think about, you know, one of the tenets of mental health, and that's kind of one of my themes, and it'll be the theme for the year, is that, you know, it's important to take care of ourselves by exercising, by eating right, by getting enough sleep, by caring, you know, deeply for those that we love, by having meaningful work. But one of the tenets that we often overlook, and it's one of the foundations, it's one of the things that we actually have some control over, because sometimes we can't control those relationships with people that we love, right? And we can never control them, actually. But we can't, you know, we can put our heart into it, but we can't always control whether or not it's going to be reciprocated. We can do the best we can getting our sleep and eating well and getting exercise, but sometimes, you know, it might not be enough. But what we found is that when we devote ourselves to a cause, to a passion, to something outside of ourselves, it has the greatest impact in making us feel grounded, making us feel settled, helping alleviate that existential angst that, you know, is there anything more than just making myself happy? You know, if we don't have that thing that drives our soul, we tend to feel empty. And if you're someone who struggles with that sense of emptiness, and doesn't matter how many perfect lattes you drink or how toned your body gets or how many, you know, great hair days you have, when you start to realize that personal happiness doesn't fill that void, you're experiencing that existential emptiness, something that needs to be filled by something greater than ourselves. And I think that's what drives a lot of people to put themselves in a position of putting their life on the line, is because filling that internal void, filling that sense of emptiness, is such a powerful driver. That sense of well-being when we're fighting for something that's more important than just our comfort, that it gives us a sense of wholeness. And I wonder if that's one of the big things that's missing in our culture today, is that we don't encourage our children. We don't encourage them to become passionate about something that they'd be willing to put their lives on the line for. We want them to stay safe. We want them to, you know, we put such a high emotional value on our children that we don't want anything to hurt them. We put, you know, helmets on them when they go for a jog. You know, we don't want our children to be hurt. And so this idea that they might become passionate about something that could put them in harm's way, we want to steer them away from it. But we might inadvertently, in our efforts to keep our children safe, actually be causing them mental discomfort, right? That opportunity to care about something greater than themselves could actually give them such a strong sense of belonging that it would help dissipate anxiety and depression and this sense of isolation and alienation. So what do you think? Have you visited any of these places? Have you been moved by any of these causes? Is there something you'd be willing to die for? I'm curious to know. 805-781-3875. Sarah, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm calling from Goleta.
Hi.
And I'm interested in your topic. I have been politically engaged my whole life, grew up in outside of D.C., so all those monuments you saw are still wonderful to me, but also very familiar. Mm-hmm. But what prompted me to call is actually my reaction just recently talking to a young person who was not registered to vote, had never voted, didn't see the point of voting. And personally, I see citizenship as a huge gift and privilege in this country, and to not exercise your right to vote is to really throw away the freedoms that we have here. I marched for civil rights. I grew up in the South under segregation, marched against the war in Vietnam, have signed any number of petitions. Yes, I'd let my kid ride that bus. I'd be so proud if she did. And I wish there were more engagement in this country, and I hope your program can bring that message home in a, you know, non-hectoring way. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for calling. And I can hear the emotion in your voice talking about it, because I think it's the thing that drives me right now is how do we engage our young people? How do we help them to feel like there's a reason to vote? And I think that's the job of our generation, is to figure out how to engage them. Thank you for calling. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. The number to be part of this conversation is 805-781-3875. And we're talking about the price of freedom. Are you willing to pay a price? Have you paid a price? And what does it take to maintain this ideal of the country that we live in? Do we still have something we can believe in more than just a day to celebrate on the 4th of July? Carol, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I just got 86 from my veterinary office. Not just, but recently. I have a lot of pets, and what happened was the doctor took the dog back, and she told me she wanted to take an x-ray, and she came back with 4 procedures and a big bill. So then I said, you know, I only came for the exam, and I told her I would have to make payments on the x-ray. And then there was a bill for hundreds of dollars, so I called the front office later, and I said I need to make payments, and they were like, okay. So I started making payments, and in the meantime, they changed their policy again, and I was bringing one dog in for surgery, and then they were telling me, well, you have to pay everything right now, and I used to have an animal group pay. Sometimes I would get the service, and then I'd send them the bill, and they'd pay them, and we've been doing this for 2 or 3 years, and I don't owe them any money. Everything's always worked out.
So, Carol, I'm sorry to interrupt you because I'm wondering how this ties into the topic of citizenry and freedom in the country, if there's a tie with animal rights or something. But I'm going to put you back with Jordan to kind of figure this out, because I'd like to hear what you have to say if it ties in to the topic, because I appreciate you calling in. I can tell you're really concerned about this issue. And so I wonder if it has to do with something with animal rights. But let's get that narrowed down. In the meantime, Kate, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. Thank you for having me. The debate that's happening right now, I guess it's under freedom of speech with the Confederate flag. Mm-hmm. It's a bit confusing to me. It's nothing I would lay down my life for, but I try to see both sides of it, and I can't understand the debate over just such a thing as a flag.
Well, so what do you think the outcome should be?
I understand how it could perhaps be offensive to some. But then the historians say, well, this is what it was really about. So I listen to both sides, I think, for myself. What if I was, I'm offended by any black flag given the Middle Eastern crisis, and I'm offended by the POW-MIA flag, would that be a cause to go march about? And I couldn't see myself taking a stance, but just remaining neutral.
So is there something that would get you fired up enough to maybe climb a flagpole and take a flag?
I think it's what you said. I'm a mother and a grandmother also. Probably for my children would be the only thing. I couldn't imagine, like, religion being an issue to, like, lay your life down about. But for your blood children, definitely yes.
Yeah, it is something I grapple with, because I think I expect more from myself. And I think that's why I was asking if anyone else had that same thing, because I think our tendency is to take the safe, neutral space on things, because then we're not controversial. But in order for things to change, I think we need to be willing to stir things up, to be an extremist, to be seen as an extremist. And so I guess maybe that's the other question. Is there something you feel so passionately about needing to change? Would you be willing to be an extremist for that?
The other thing I was telling my friend recently was the Hillary Clinton for president. Because I'm a female, yes, I'm a mother and a grandmother. I would love to see, since the blacks and the women now got the vote, I would love to see the next step in our history repeating, and that to be a woman president. So that would be something I would hold the sign for, yes.
Well, there you go. I will be looking on your front yard to see if it ends up there.
There you go.
Thanks for calling in, Kate. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 805-781-3875. My question to you is there some cause, is there some passion that you would be willing to lay your life on the line for? Would you have signed the Declaration of Independence? Would you have been a freedom rider in Montgomery? Would you have walked from Selma to Montgomery? Would you do these things? Is there a cause? And is there anything worth fighting for anymore at all? Mike, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello, yes. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
I really wanted to say that I wish I were stronger in my convictions, but I am an atheist. I look around and I see the world embroiled in conflict, and many times it is religion. You mentioned that you have religious beliefs that you might be able to put your life on the line for. I wish I could do it more, but that's something that I believe we need to change in our whole culture in order to move to the next, stage in our advancement as civilized people. That's just the way I believe, and I really wish I had stronger convictions, because there's a lot of anti-atheist sediment everywhere we go. Everywhere if I bring this up, people don't think of atheists as just non-believers. they think of them as Satanists or mm-hmm. some other nonsensical idea. So I guess that's my point.
So there is a piece of you that believes so fully in this cause, this injustice in the way that atheism is viewed, that you might put yourself in the forefront for that, or no?
Yes.
Yes.
I think I would.
Okay.
You know, I try to bring it out to certain people, but, you know, to just be as out as I would like to be, it would be dangerous both for... Not for me personally, I believe, but for perhaps my economic security and, you know, that sort of thing. And I would lose a lot of friends, I think, or people that I know and that I'm acquainted with, but might not be able to understand that, have such strong convictions themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's your thought on that? You mentioned that you have some religious belief. What are your thoughts on atheists and atheism?
Well, it's interesting because... I didn't say that I had a religious belief. I said that I admire those that have a strong enough religious belief that they would put their name on something or stand up for it. So
okay.
So I have not, as I said, my concern is that I don't know if I have the conviction for a cause. I mean, I believe when it comes to young people and injustice and mental health, I have strong, strong passions, but I don't know what the issue would be that would get me to walk with a flag or lead a march or, you know, so I'm grappling like you. You know, I think this idea of tolerance for all people is maybe the great next step. And maybe that's where we're edging with humanity is not being fearful of each other, but having compassion for each other. And I'm stealing a little bit from the Martin Luther King Memorial that, you know, his beautiful quotes, and there's 17 beautiful quotes. And this idea of, you know, we can't walk in fear of each other. You know, we can't fear that an atheist is trying to, you know, ruin our lives. If we meet each other with fear, then the next that follows is violence. And so that's...
I got to say, I'm absolutely delighted about the recent Supreme Court decision that legalized gay marriage throughout the United States. And, you know, as an atheist, if you think of a reason to be active, it's that. And what was it that prevented this from occurring earlier? Religious belief. A belief that by religious folks, Christians to be specific, that being gay is somehow evil or ungodly. And, to deny the negative effects of religion on our society and our world is ridiculous. I mean, if we look at ISIS, if we look at this recent decision, these are the things that influence our world. And I like you, I'm looking for more people to be compassionate, understanding, and not so negative.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you taking the time to call. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And, you know, the topic that moved me today was my recent trip back east and going and seeing the National Mall and these monuments to Jefferson and Martin Luther King and Washington and Lincoln. And I'm sure, you know, I feel like everyone's been there but me, but now it's moving through me. And then taking the trip to Montgomery, Alabama, this dichotomous place, which was the birthplace of the Confederacy and also home to many of the civil rights events that led to change in our culture. And so I'm curious to know if you feel this passion for something that would connect you to something greater to yourself and this idea of compassion for others and coming from a place of uniting our lives instead of segregating our lives. I mean, I guess that's what I think about with the 4th of July. It's a day that we come together in as one people, living this ideal of what we all individually believe the United States is all about, right? It's a country of many, many diverse opinions and many, many diverse ideals and beliefs. But on the 4th of July, we come together as one people, who have many strong feelings about what it means to be an American, but we share this love of the ideal. I don't know. What do you think of that? Mari, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yes. Well, I'm certainly enjoying your show today, and I'm thinking that, kind of piggybacking on what the last speaker was saying, and he was concerned that he might lose out either financially or lose friends if he were to do more for his cause. Mm-hmm. And my thinking is that historically, if we look at the people who have made the changes, even people, evil people who have done bad things, they have gone beyond, I believe, just rational thinking, and the word zealotry or a zealot has sort of a negative connotation anymore. But I think that to be so impassioned about a cause, whether it has an immediate effect on my life, my family's life, my community's life, I think we have to go beyond where that young man is willing to go, because I think that being a causist, being passionate, is about loss.
Mm-hmm.
Very often it's about loss. It is, I think it's our personal gain, because at the end of the day we feel good about what we did. We feel that we have done something productive for our cause. But I think it really is. I think we have to leave the realm of regular thinking and take risks. And what else is taking risk about, except our own sort of personal standing or our own personal safety or in society our own personal status?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about all the good things, and the young lady who just scaled the flagpole, and I'm saying, God bless. Mm-hmm. That took courage. As she said, being interviewed, I was up there. I was a target for anyone. You talked about the young man driving the truck. Imagine what it would be like to be up a flagpole in a day when people have, you know, more guns than sense. And so I just thought how courageous it was on her part. I think that for you and certainly for me, I am passionate about a lot of concerns. I was a teacher an educator for many years, and would go to bat for a child or a parent for their needs and become unpopular and live with that because students have rights and it's not comfortable and it's not pleasant. I think that we leave the realm of personal concern and just get into the arena.
Thank you.
That's kind of my thinking. I think we sort of stop thinking about what everybody else would think and what everybody else would do because obviously, you know, it isn't happening.
Absolutely.
I think that's
the next step, is we finding the cause and then being willing to leave our comfort zone, our comfortable place, putting our reputations or our well-being on the line. And Martin Luther King wrote a famous letter from the jail in Birmingham in 1963. And one of the things he does, a beautiful section, and I don't have it in front of me, I wish I did, but he talks about being an extremist. And then he names those extremists throughout history. And one he names is Jesus Christ, who was considered an extremist for his beliefs. And so in order for great things to happen, Martin Luther King was considered an extremist. You know, we have to be able to, and be willing to put ourselves out that far. Thank you so much for calling. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And Mark, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Elizabeth. Thank you for taking my call. I was motivated by your comment that I agree with, that many of us are not wanting to make waves. There's almost a cultural avoid conflict. I think that even in our daily lives, we have an opportunity to vocalize our opinions, even if they're not real popular, be it on social media. Mm-hmm. If one posts support for Greenpeace, I'm an environmentalist. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to think that I'd be willing to lay my life down, such as what Greenpeace does. But there's also a daily opportunity, like if you see somebody littering, you know, are you willing to say, sir, ma'am, could you please pick that up? That's really bad for the environment. I wonder if it's also like a cultural willing ignorance. There's a lot of fluff on Facebook. If people knew some of the important issues, I think people would be inspired to get involved. But there's also a lack of willingness to know so much that you get passionate, and then you know, it's uncomfortable if you know how much your carbon footprint is, or if we could be a lighter footprint on the environment. But I would like to think that definitely the environment is something worth dying for. I actually like the environment and critters that are exploited out there more than I like people. And I think it's a reasonable cause, because without this planet, what do we have?
Well said, Mark. And so do you think you'd be someone who would ride, I can't remember the name of the boat that Greenpeace takes out, right, and blocks the Japanese fishermen? Would you do that?
I would like to, yeah, or climb that tree, or I applaud those people on that Rainbow Warrior boat that was actually bombed 30 years ago. There's been some amazing sacrifices done for the environmental cause. And I think they're worthwhile, at least to get the attention that, hey, somebody might be trying to cut down this beautiful tree. Before they do that, let's at least look at this, just for promoting the knowledge of, hey, look what they're trying to do in the Arctic. Look what they're trying to do, mountaintop removal, exploitation of the planet.
So here's my question. You sound young, Mark. Are you a young man?
30.
You're a young man.
I'm a Cal Poly graduate.
You're young. Thank you. Go Mustangs.
Yes, ma'am.
But I ask you this as a young man of 30, and you, in the cause of your generation is the environment. I mean, that's my bias, because I feel like if we can allow people, find ways for people to live to be 112, it's of no use if we have no environment for them to live in, right? So I really feel your passion for the environmental causes. But my question is, what in your generation is going to be equivalent to the march from Selma to Montgomery when it comes to protecting the environment? Because the small acts, I think Facebook lulls us into this idea that we're doing something by posting a rainbow picture on our page or, by posting, petitions. I think if I learned anything about my trip across the country, was that all these changes happened because men and women physically put themselves into places of danger or of extremeness. And I think that's what the internet, unfortunately, has done, is given us this buffer between action, real action, and faux action. So I want to know what you're going to do at 30, because you're young, and if you're going to live another 70, 80 years, what's it going to be about? What's going to be your story at the end of the road? Something to think about.
I would like to think that, two aspects. That on, Facebook, instead of posting somebody else's post or sharing a post, actually putting your own opinion out there, it has weight, because then you're actually thinking for yourself, hopefully encouraging others to be bold enough to think for themselves. But also, instead of just posting fluff and pretty cute cat pictures, actually posting knowledge. I mean, maybe the cause of my generation is not to let some of the important knowledge or information, let's just say like what people have done for the environmental causes and what the value of being more environmentally conscious is, if we were to ride the bus instead of drive the car, if we were to eat vegetarian instead of not eating meat, that would make a huge difference in the environmental cause. And, that's like the overpopulation discussion. Some of these things are not popular. A lot of people will eat their meat even if they know they could do better by the environment if they didn't. But it's also unpopular to think, oh, we have too many humans on this planet, but that's a pretty true story. And putting that out there, willing to be ostracized, even if it's a good point, a lot of people might not get their ear eventually, I'll grade it out, but it's worth putting out there some of the things that are, well, again, the idea is what we're passionate about, and it's just promoting being active.
Not only promoting, but actually being active, too. So I think that the steps are in the right direction, but I think the actual action has got to be next. Because, again, I keep going back to what Martin Luther King and the Freedom Riders and these and the people who marched, they actually put their body and themselves out there into the public. How do we translate a great opinion into mass action? I don't know. I'm just putting it out there because I think it's a dilemma. I think there's lots of great little steps. But it's the big steps that I think are going to change the world. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can be part of the conversation at 805-781-3875. You can also find us on our Facebook page, our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. And I just want to share a couple of the quotes that I took from the National Mall that really are driving me right now. And the first one is from the Martin Luther King Memorial. And he said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly." And that's this idea of being part of a web, that even though we might be comfortable in our lives, if one person is uncomfortable in any other part of this country, it impacts us. And until we start to see our lives as interconnected with each other, we live a segregated life. We live a segregated culture. We think that segregation has end, but whenever we separate ourselves from the experience of others who are living, not just in our country, but on this planet, we are living in segregation and fear, and it's very difficult to unite and make change if we are too comfortable in our silos, in our day-to-day. What do you think about that? 805-781-3875. Susan, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. You were asking, is there anything you're really passionate about, you're willing to be ostracized for,
yes,
you're willing to put your life on the line for? I'm an abortion provider. I specialize in very late abortions. I was working for Dr. Tiller, who was the doctor who was murdered in his church 6 years ago. And I feel that there's a sort of an attempt to make me feel ostracized, and I certainly feel that my life is threatened by doing this work and doing it openly. And I think that it's important to be open about what you do. I'm thinking of the guy who said he was an atheist and he was afraid to say so. I used to be afraid to say I'm an abortion provider for fear people would yell at me. And I realized that's colluding in my own ostracism. And so I don't do that anymore. I'm very open about what I do. I love what I do. I'm in the business of giving women back their lives, giving them back their hopes and dreams. And if there's some guy out there who says he's going to shoot me for it, I sort of feel like capitulating to that would be like capitulating to a playground bully. That's what these people are who threaten abortion providers. They're just big, grown-up playground bullies.
So what brought you to this place of conviction to the point of putting your life on the line for it?
Well, I started getting interested in doing abortion care the first time a doctor was shot in Pensacola, because I thought, not knowing about how dedicated people are to this work, that people would be scared out of it. And then when I was working for Dr. Tiller and he was assassinated in his church, that absolutely put out of my mind any question of ever being bullied out of this work. Because there are women out there who desperately need it, and there have to be people who say, "Okay, I'm going to provide the care you need." Mm-hmm. And the women, every time I go to work, I don't work in California; I work in New Mexico. But every time I go to work, people tell me that I've given them their life back, or I've saved their life. And there aren't very many other areas where you get constant reinforcement to counterbalance the ostracism and screaming and yelling.
Well, it's interesting because abortion rights in some ways are like what happened to the civil rights movement and the fight for the right to vote. Is people forget that abortion is legal. People forgot that voting was legal for the blacks who were fighting for the right to be able to actually exercise their right. And I think there's a lot of civil liberties that are being stripped away quietly, and one of them is access to health care and abortion rights for women. They're just quietly being taken away because people are too afraid to stand up and do something else. And so, Susan, I appreciate you feeling the confidence and the conviction to stand up and do what is a legal right in this country. Thank you.
I also wanted to sort of second what you said about having a passion outside yourself gives you still some existential space that isn't filled by a large number of lattes and good air days. I'm 70, and I am very hesitant to retire, one, because there aren't very many, well, there are only like four people in the world who do the late abortion care, but I also don't know what would cause me to have so much passion and so much reinforcement against such odds as this work. And it's very fulfilling, and it makes me feel like my life is worth something.
Well, and I feel that same passion, and I think that that's when I talk to young people who call in or young people in any place, I so want them to have that filled sense of purpose, because I think that is one of the main things that we drop the ball on in our culture is in our efforts to keep people safe. We've stripped them of the ability to feel they're a part of something greater than themselves, to take a chance. And Susan, thank you again for taking the time to call. Karen, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I wanted to say that I heard, I think it's Bree Wilson, the woman who climbed the flagpole earlier on Democracy Now.
Yes.
And I was so impressed with her fervor and her clarity. And I just cheered when I saw her climbing that flagpole, because it brought back some of the activism that I've done in my past. And I wanted to share a little bit about that. I think it was attributed to Woody Allen, who said that 90% of success is just showing up. And I think what you're speaking here to today and speaking about is about the difference between saying you might want to get on a Greenpeace ship or you hope that you will one day. There's a difference between having a commitment to it and then showing up and doing what you said you were going to do. And I think the strength of an individual's and an individual's sense of self lies in their ability to live the truth that they're speaking and line that up.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's fine. So one of the things that I can point to in my own life that I did where I put my life on the line was March Against the Vietnam War. And I did it as a 17-year-old and as 16 and 17-year-old years in Baltimore and in Washington, D.C. And what happened to me in D.C. was I was cut, handcuffed by police, and I was put into a pen on the Capitol lawn, I think it was. And they tear gassed us while we were in the enclosed area. And I never expected that something like that would happen to a peaceful marcher. And then they, without really indicting us for anything, they herded us into a sports auditorium, like an enclosed arena. And we slept there for 3 days with hardly anything to eat. And I was mugshot at 17, which is illegal. And I have no idea what happened to that mugshot. Who knows, maybe the FBI has me on trial. But they didn't let us out for quite a while. And at the time, my brother Greg, my next oldest brother, was serving in Vietnam in the Rangers. And I was perfectly clear about sending him a magazine to read or cookies for the guys that he was fighting with. But I wasn't against him. I was against the war. I thought that the premise of it was wrong. And even these many years later, when they interviewed McNamara, he confessed approximately the same thing. And so I was galvanized by my experience, and I continued to march against the war. And I do think that we had an effect on bringing it down when we did.
And I think that's important to share with the next generation, because I don't think they believe that there is a difference, that those kind of demonstrations do make a difference. But if you look historically, yes, the marches against Vietnam did have an impact on it coming to an end. And finally, Karen, any regrets for what you did?
Not in the least. Right. And the other thing I wanted to mention, if I have a second, is that, you know, this complicit behavior that you're teasing out here. And I see it in polite company. It's like people don't want to discuss politics in California, not like they do back east. And I've been out here for a long, long time. But it may just be time has passed and the social norms are different. But, you know, watching Selma on a recent plane flight home from Boston, I was, again, impressed by the wisdom and the strength and the courage of the people that marched with Martin Luther King and the damage that was done to them. You know, they did put their lives on the line. People did get shot and got clubbed to death because they were marching against essentially racism and inequality. And I think that kind of fervor is still needed because we aren't in a post-race society.
Well said. Thank you, Karen, for taking the time to call. And I think it is important to note that the people who marched and made a difference, the people who put their lives on the line as freedom riders, signing the Declaration of Independence, you know, marching against Vietnam War, were not magical people of any higher status than anyone else in the country. They were housewives, husbands, doctors, farmers, you know, regular people like all of us who felt the call to something greater than themselves. And one of the places that we stopped along the way was a road march landmark, a landmark on the side of the road that was there for Viola Liuzu. I don't think I'm saying her name correctly, but she was a 39-year-old homemaker with five children who heard Martin Luther King's call and drove down to Selma to help transport individuals, and was murdered by a Klan on the side of the road for her efforts. These are average people. They are us. And how do we find the conviction to be part of that? Stacy, you got about 30 seconds. Last thought.
Oh, well, I just wanted to say I'm working on the oil train issue here locally, and we are talking to lots of people, and I just see a lot of cynicism or people not wanting to get involved. They just feel that their voice isn't heard, that they just feel disconnected from even basic things like going and talking to their city council or writing a letter. And I know for myself generationally, the first thing I remember was Kennedy being shot, and then Martin Luther King, and then his brother. And I think when you grow up in that situation and they keep voting in these, you know, Nixon after Watergate, it's just really hard to feel that anything you do will make a difference. And God bless everybody who keeps trying, because it's disheartening. And I'm really happy to be working on something now, but I'm really seeing a lot of disconnect. People want change, but they don't know what to do, or they don't feel they'll make a difference.
Thank you, Stacy.
And thanks for the show.
Thank you. And that is why we do this show every week, because it's in these conversations. We have to have the conversations. That's where the power in the people lies, is that when enough people have a conversation about something that's meaningful to them, things begin to change. Just as the passage of gay marriage, there was nothing top down about that. It was a bottom up. There were enough people in this country who had a conversation, who said, why is this not a thing? And when enough people agreed with this conversation, it forced change. And so that's what we do each week. We come together, we have conversations about things that matter to us, and we keep having the conversations and spreading the word and putting ourselves out there and taking chances in speaking our truth. Take the chance in being an extremist, because if we stop having the conversations, then we stop having a reason to live. And this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Thank you for being part of the conversation. I leave you today with a song that I always look for a reason to play at least once or twice a year. It's a beautiful rendition of one of the most beautiful songs about this country that we live in as we celebrate freedom and we continue to be part of the conversation together. I leave you with Renee.
Tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee we bow to sing. Land of the pilgrim's pride, same land where my forefathers died. Ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. From every mountainside, we're gonna let freedom ring. We're gonna let freedom ring. My native country, thee, oh, the land of the noble free, thy name I love. I love thy rocks, I love thy rills, I love thy woods and thy tales.